Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hey, Energy Matters listeners, welcome back. Great to have you here. And are you ready to get your life in order? We have got the guy for you. Nick Wood is our guest today, and what a fun episode it was. I love his take on coaching. It's called Life Athletics, the Sport of Living Well. And what a fun guy to talk to. He's really articulate and had a great kind of idea about coaching and how to kind of take your life to the next level. And he's also a fellow podcaster, and David and I were marveling at the fact that he has 155 episodes. We're on episode, what are we on now?
28.
And we're thinking, man, this stuff is hard work. This guy's got 155 episodes.
We might need to hire him as our coach.
Exactly. How to make more episodes.
Yeah, Nick Wood is a diamond in the rough. You know, he's hidden in Bali, Indonesia. I found him there. We talk a bit about that in the episode about how we connected. And I really, really like his message. Love the work and teaching that he's doing. And by the end of the episode, I was like, I'll hire you as my life coach. Let's do this.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you feel like you need a little help, a little guidance, how to structure your goals and your path, then Nick has got some serious wisdom for you. Loved it. So here we go. Nick Wood.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Energy Matters, where we are doing live Zoom webinar, and or you may be listening via audio, but we're going to make it available via webinar. And we have an awesome guest today, my good friend Nick Wood out of Bali, Indonesia, actually from Canada, but you're in Bali. Hey, Nick, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Nick has an amazing podcast, Life Athletics, and he's an amazing host himself. So it's great to have you, to ask you some questions. You know, it's interesting the way we met. I was teaching a retreat in Bali and you came to teach the group one night, and I was super impressed with what you had to offer. So I was like, I got to get this guy on the podcast. And you were honestly the first life coach that I had ever crossed paths with. And I didn't even know what a life coach was. And at the end of your talk, I was like, whoa, maybe I need a life coach. I mean, I know Cody needs one for sure, but maybe I need one too. Can we just start by maybe you explaining to us what a life coach does, what a life coach is?
Sure. I mean, it's easy to be impressive when you're the first one. I'll take that. And it's really nice to be on this side of the microphone. So thank you for having me. A life coach. It's interesting because I've resisted calling myself a life coach sometimes, but it's the easiest pathway for people to understand immediately kind of what I do. And calling my brand Life Athletics, where I look at life like it's a game or a sport or a trainable activity, the idea of a coach really fits. I think Tony Robbins really popularized the idea of a coach, and then it became an industry in of itself. And the idea is having someone who stands for you to go from where you are to where you want to be. So the same way that someone who wants to get better at tennis will hire someone to help them improve their swing, how much more complex is your life than your backhand in tennis? And yet, for some reason in life, we think we need to do it all by ourselves. And really, it's nearly impossible to see ourselves with any sense of perspective. And so having someone else that's external, who's committed to your greatness, really just seems to amplify and speed up the process of you going from where you are to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I get people really clear on where they want to be, who they would be once they got there, and looking at how they can take that way of being, once they get clear on it, into the present, right? And have that way of being influence this moment right now, this next decision, this next breath. Mm. So that's kind of what I do.
And so tell us about what Life Athletics is, that analogy that you use, that life is a game or the kind of game that you choose to play.
Sure.
Yeah, were you an athletics coach before, a life coach?
Well, yes. I've been a basketball coach. I've been a personal trainer. But I grew up wishing that I'd played more sports. right? I was raised primarily by my mom. My parents split when I was young. And she's not a sports person. And that's fine, but I didn't get the sports training that I wished that I'd had. Also, I was born with a concave chest and breathing was difficult. I was the oldest person in Canada to ever have the surgery that I had. I think that record's been broken since. But at the time, I was 22 almost, and normally it was done at 8-year-olds. And so breath was a challenging thing. So in my early 20s, I started doing transformational programs and exploring myself more and more. And one of the things that I saw was the level of blame that I had towards my parents for not being the athlete that I wished that I was. And so I shook that off, that blame. And in one of the programs, I ran during a break to a sporting goods store. It was like 15 minutes. I just ran the whole way, bought a basketball, ran back, made it in time at the end of the break. And I started practicing dribbling and just getting rid of whatever excuses that I had of, I'm not good enough to play basketball with people. So in my apartment, I was practicing dribbling with this basketball. And then I became a personal trainer as well. I learned how to lift weights and I started working in gyms. And I remember one day, someone who was really visibly not in shape came into a gym where I was working and they started talking at me, not asking questions, but just talking at me. They started with what seemed like a question, but there was no gap for feedback. And then they left. And I felt just really overwhelmed and caught in a whirlwind. And part of me went into, well, that was ridiculous. They didn't get any value from me and judgment. And then I stopped myself and said, okay, hold on. Where am I that out of shape and that closed to feedback? Because what it felt like was that they wanted to be able to check the box of, oh, I asked a trainer and that didn't help. Right? Because they didn't get any value from me, right? That I could see. And so I asked myself that question. And when you ask yourself questions like that, where am I that out of shape and closed to feedback or blind? Your brain will give you answers. And it was this flood of your finances, your relationships, like even your body, like all these different things, like you are not in shape in these areas. And that metaphor, standing in a gym, it just became clear that all of it's trainable, right? If you want to get into physical shape, there is a really clear and defined process to whatever kind of shape you want to get into, right? You can just model all of that. And the same thing is true for every other area of life. There are people who are doing the thing you want to do at the level you want to be doing it, right? Maybe you have some moonshot vision in your head and the pathway hasn't been laid yet, but from where you are probably to a good deal ahead, the pathway is laid out. Mm-hmm. And wow. So when that became a conscious thought, I thought, well, all right, it's all trainable. How do I train myself up? And honestly, it's been a process it's so much easier for me to work with other people. And I think it's the same thing with everyone else. Yeah. But it's been a process to get myself up to even this level. And it's constant growth. But part of it also is, if life's a game or a physical activity, can I have fun with it, right? So one thing's getting good at it. The other thing's having fun with it. And I think both sides are really important.
Oh, yeah. When did this all happen? I mean, that's like a huge epiphany. Like, how old were you to see that and make that transition?
I was in my early 20s.
Wow.
And there were layers of things that I had to let go of even to get here. I started coaching years ago and I didn't think I was at the level that I wanted to be at. So I ended up firing all my clients, right? Integrity is such a big thing for me and it was then as well. But here's the twist. What I felt was integrity was pure ego. Because my clients were saying that they were getting benefit from me. I was saying I wasn't good enough. So I was dominating the situation with my ego, ignoring that they were saying, we're benefiting from you. And it took until the last couple of years to remember, if I'm to be of service, it's about them.
Right.
And so while I'm still a work in progress, I have a proven track record of being able to help people get on their path and actively level up, which is what I say is my mission for the world. I want to live in a world, I'm living into a world where everyone is firmly on their path and actively leveling up, actively improving.
Mm. And so, Nick, how does somebody know and get a sense of, am I on my path or not? Because, you know, I work with clients as well, and that's probably one of the most common questions is like, am I on my path? And if I'm not, how do I get on it? What does that look like?
Sure. Now I can go through my methodology in a minute, but I've been saying it in a short way, which is, what if your guiding light was the degree to which you were lit up? And you know you're on your path when it lights you up. That might feel like fear. That might feel like anxiety sometimes. And we might process these physical sensations as those emotions, but it's the same physical reactions that we can also label as excitement, right? Fear and excitement have a very similar biological pattern in the body. Mm. But what if all we were doing was following our deepest excitement, right? Even that can be overcomplicated by people, though. So this is where the name of your show really excites me. Energy Matters, because I think it's get yourself into state. Make sure your energy is at the highest level you can get it, right? Not just hype, but really visualize yourself in an empowered state and then look at what excites you from that place. And then constantly refer back to that, even when you're not in as empowered a state. Be clear that that's what your highest version that you can currently access, that's the path you want to be on. Mm. So what I do with people, right, my process, I have a 7-week coaching process that I take people through. And at the end, pretty much everybody reports that they feel like they're on their path powerfully and actively leveling up, and they know where they're going. So what I do the first week with people is we look at 8 different areas of life. And in each area, I have them picture what they would view as best in the world. This calibrates the scale. This isn't what your best is potentially. This is what best in the world is. This is what you would look at externally to you and say, wow, that's amazing. Even if you don't want to be that, sometimes especially if you don't want to be that. And this isn't necessarily to compare yourself, even though there is a comparison in the next step. This is to get past the conscious mind that judges and evaluates whether or not you're good enough to have something. Making it external allows you to picture something that is far beyond your current reality safely. And safety, I think, is one of the key parts to all of this. Making sure that internally it's safe for you to shift, because identity fights for survival. And so one of the biggest challenges in terms of taking on a new identity, a new reality, is creating safety. So once you establish safety and you can picture this 10 out of 10 best in the world, then you do ask, relative to that, where am I? And I have this scale that helps people sort of rank themselves. And I mean, the numbers are arbitrary. The main thing is I've established 5 on my scale as the pass fail mark. So if you're establishing yourself below 5 in any area, well, you want to be above your pass fail mark in your life, right? So one of the only shoulds of my program is if you're below 5 in an area, that should be one of the first areas to address, because it's taking power from you and probably those in your life. So once you figure out 10 out of 10 best in the world, and then where are you currently, then it's what I call your horizon goal. As far as you can see from where you're currently standing, where do you want to be? And generally, it's on a line between where you are and this 10 out of 10. And at this point, it's usually hugely liberating for people to realize they don't want to be 10 out of 10, sometimes in any area. Right, to be best in the world right. In any area requires so much. And yet most people are walking through life. Like, there's a Will Ferrell movie where he's a race car driver and his dad puts this idea in his head. Talladega Nights. Yeah. And his dad keeps saying, if you're not first, you're last. And it's a funny line in the movie.
Yeah.
But people are walking through life like that. People are walking through life like if they're not the best in the world, then they're nothing. And so when people realize that their horizon goals, as far as they can see, and if a genie taps them on the head and if everything just worked out, they don't want to be best in the world still, it releases a lot of tension. And because their brain has been able to picture that 10 out of 10, it makes their horizon goal feel a lot more accessible, right? It's like, oh, wow, I don't want to be an Olympian or a CrossFit level champion. I just want to be able to do a handstand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, generally, most people in a yoga class, there'll be at least 1 or 2 people who can do a handstand.
Right.
Okay. Right. I mean, I'm 6'6" and over 200 pounds. And so I think that that's like, I had that thought that that's a far away impossibility. But normalizing that, seeing people my size do handstands, I've been improving.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's funny, Nick, is yesterday I ran into Will Ferrell.
What?
Yeah. Here in LA. And I ran into him in a cafe and caught eyes for a moment. And he was definitely trying to hide, you know, sunglasses, hat and everything. I remember thinking like, man, that must be tough to be so famous. Like he was with his son and he's like
like ninjaing to try to grab some tea or coffee or something and then get out of there. And like, so he reached his 10, but there's a cost. I was kind of thinking about the cost that came with that because of that awkwardness of like, don't look at me alone.
I was having a conversation with a friend the other day who wants to make a huge impact in the world. And she is also afraid of that, that notoriety, that celebrity, that impossibility to just go get tea without having someone recognize you and say something and want something from you. And so when I talk about safety, right, some people's brains jump immediately to like physical threat, right? Home invasion, some sort of like extreme scenario.
Yeah. Cody pulled that on me once.
What I mean though is that if we have a fear of being so well known that if we go get tea, someone will recognize us, and if that scares us, then we don't have the internal permission to move forward. So at some point, he had to say, well, as much as I might not love that all of the time, that's okay, right? These celebrities at some point have made it okay that they're going to be celebrities, or they don't stay there very long, right? Just your internal workings won't let you stay there if it's not safe.
Right.
So I think like one of the things that I do is I have people look at their goals and say, well, if this happened, are you allowed to have that? And almost everybody, it's a no at first. Right?
Yeah.
Their most idealized life, their dreams are laid out in paper in front of them. And the question is posed to them, can you have that? Are you allowed to have that? And it's no. But when the no comes up, the yes becomes available. When the no is invisible and subconscious, and we're trying to build on top of it with happy thoughts and words of affirmation.
Yeah. Nothing happens. Like
nothing happens. Yeah. So you have to allow yourself to see the no, to face it. And then say what would be necessary to have that be a yes.
I think seeing that no opens the door to recognizing that you have to grow to that place, right? And so rather than it being, well, that's what I want, it should just happen to me. If I see that no and realize, you know, that that's something in me, now I can kind of grow towards the yes. And obviously you provide steps for that growth and foundation. And yeah, that's pretty cool. I've never quite thought of it that way.
It is why I call it the horizon path, and why I say that success is being on your path and actively leveling up, right? That's success for me. A world where everyone was doing that, that doesn't mean everyone's achieved their goals, but everyone's on their path and actively leveling up. Because, I mean, Guy Ritchie said in a podcast interview, sometimes you have to pick up the trophy to realize that it's hollow. The number of people who think, it'll be it when I make $100,000 in a month, right? Or it'll be it when I date a woman who looks like that. Or it'll be it when I have six-pack abs. And they get there and they realize that wasn't quite it. They haven't developed the ability to appreciate anything in life. They've just been so focused on achieving something rather than becoming someone. Mm. My whole idea is if you can start being your horizon self today and start living from the place where all of your decisions lead to that life, inherent in that is an appreciation and a valuing of what you're up to.
Yeah.
And that's really the key.
And then whether you can validate the journey. It's
Yes, exactly. One of the things that I do is I start every call with, or every meeting, every meetup, every session with, what was the win for you this week? And I don't overexplain it. And sometimes people get confused. They say, well, with the homework, with the program, what do you mean? Is it anything? What was a win for you? And I allow their brain to struggle with that question for a minute and to start spitting out answers for where were they winning? Because if life's a game, what's a win for you? How are you scoring it? And so many people have no idea. So many people are walking through life thinking that they're failing, thinking that they're losing. But if you ask them what a win is, right? I mean, basketball is clear. You put the spherical thing through the round thing and you get a certain number of points depending on the situation in the game. Life isn't always as clear. We have to define where our points come from. And again, without knowing where their points come from, most people are saying that they're losing. And some people in my program, the biggest thing has come from them noticing that they're already winning more than they thought. And they allow themselves to chill out. Some people came in and they had lots of friends, health, money, good place to live, everything, but they weren't satisfied. And the only thing they got from my program was the ability to appreciate their life, the only thing. And, and so from the external, nothing looked like it shifted, but everything shifted.
Nick, who is that person for you when somebody asks you that question? Who is the 10 who is that person that you compared yourself to?
And honestly, it's shifted. Every time I do my own program, I approach it differently. And so at first it used to be an amalgam of real people, and then it was purely fictionalized. And now I treat it like if I was, I started a screenplay writing club at my university. I like writing, I like movies. And so I often take people through a process where it's like if you were writing a script and you were creating a character for the best in the world. They might have attributes of real people and they might be an amalgam of real people and they might have other qualities. So let's create that character. And that sort of creates enough freedom in people's minds to go in whatever direction. But often, a lot of recipes for me start with chopped onions and garlic, right? Right. Like there's a base of what I use to cook. The base for most of my areas has been Tony Robbins. He's been a fixture. He's been doing what he does for 2 years longer than I've been alive.
And you just went to see him, right?
I just went to see him. And it was amazing how that was a clearing of an old block of mine. But yeah, Tony Robbins, he's okay. Taller than me. The first time that I saw him live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I get compared to him fairly often. We both have voice, the height.
Yeah.
The deep voice is there. And he gives himself full freedom to use it. I keep catching myself raising the tonality of my voice. I think because I've been afraid of being too much. Mm-hmm. Right? I went through periods of being abused when I was younger, being bullied when I was younger. And I didn't want to be an abuser or a bullier or a bully when it became clear that I was now bigger than most of the world,
right?
Physically. And yet I've been so far from that line that people have been calling for me to let out more aggression, let out more anger and upset. Like quite comfortably, people have been asking me to express myself fully, and it's been really beautiful. And going to see Tony live unhooked that to a higher level because he gives himself freedom to be whatever, right? He's manipulative. He can be angry. He can be lustful. He can be all of these things. And he gives himself full permission and he's completely committed to the excellence of humanity and seeing himself completely free to just be human. And he doesn't give himself freedom and justify it, right? If he's being a jerk, he doesn't feel bad that he was a jerk. He notices that he was being a jerk and he recommits to coming from a beautiful space, right? He recommits to listening to the other's perspective and how maybe he was missing that, right? So he just doesn't fight himself. He represents love of self in his acceptance of self. And so it's not a validation of like, well, now I get to be a jerk all the time because Tony Robbins something. No, it's don't stop ourselves. Don't turn things dark by the negativity of judgment, but instead realize, okay, that's what came up and then represents love, represents connection. So Tony Robbins is up there. Peter Diamandis has been added to the list a bunch. I love his thinking. He's constantly looking at what is the thing that would make the biggest difference in the world that you would love to see have happen? And then what's the moonshot version of that? What's the 100 times version of that idea, right? Because it doesn't take it 100 times more effort, he says, to 100 times the impact. And that level of unbridled thinking is also apparent in Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Elon has this amazing thing where he thinks, and he talks about this openly, he believes that we're living inside of a matrix-like construct. And other people have talked about that. But what I love about him, my observation, right, he hasn't said this fully, but my observation is, if you were to actually think none of this was real, it would unhook your mind in a way. If you were like, I'm in a video game, but you didn't resist it, and you just accepted it, then you could do anything. You could revolutionize the car industry. You could revolutionize the power industry. You could get your ass to Mars, right? To quote Total Recall. And you would be able to be whatever you wanted to be. And so many people are shackled by the idea of limitations that we're creating for ourselves. That I think that thought exercise, if this was all just a video game and you could do anything, what would you do?
Yeah. That's so much like Steve Jobs' big epiphany that really, I think, partly set him free when he realized that everything that exists was just made up by people. And why couldn't he make up whatever he wanted? And it's kind of funny that they both, I didn't know that about Elon Musk, but they both have that similar freeing of themselves from the construct that we live in allowed them to go beyond it and recreate it in huge ways.
That's in huge ways.
Very interesting.
What I've noticed, because I used to live in India, so my training was very like Eastern, traditionally like Eastern spirituality, is that that concept comes from the East, right? That everything is Maya, everything is an illusion, the Hindus and the Buddhists. And so but what they do with it sometimes is they go, well, then it all doesn't matter since everything is an illusion. It doesn't matter, so why would I try? And I've seen a lot of people when I lived in India in that kind of, Westerners and Indians, in that kind of space of like, this is all an illusion. It doesn't matter. Why would you bother getting in a
relationship? And that's the nuance.
Yeah.
That's the nuance that inspires me about Elon. Right? Because we're still playing the game, right?
No,
if this is all a video game, we're still playing.
We can either
be like, well, I guess none of it matters. But I mean, the program that I did when I was in my 20s, they have a thing where they say, life is empty and meaningless. And it's empty and meaningless that it's empty and meaningless. And human beings create meaning constantly. So now deal with that. Right? So none of it really like means anything, but we're always making up meaning. And to try to unhook from that, right? Like, the whole be desireless thing from the East and, well, none of it means anything. Like, that's meaning-making, right? It's still part of it. The desire to be desireless, for me, is one of the greatest paradoxes that exists, right? And, yeah.
So, I'm sure you see a lot of that in Bali.
Totally.
Living there, yeah.
I mean, there's this danger of living in Ubud, especially, where people talk about, well, if it's in my flow, then definitely.
I've experienced like that.
Yeah, people will say that they want to have dinner with me. And I say, great, how's Tuesday? Well, I'll see if it's in my flow. Well, or let's put it in our calendar. And if something changes, fine. But like, there's a forward thrust, yang energy that's essential to merge with the yin. And for me, flow isn't just being a leaf drifting in the ocean, right? For me, flow is, can you be like a kayaker or a rafter going with the direction of the rapids, but also guiding it, being totally present and aware and having the time of your life?
Right.
Like,
and knowing where you're going, maybe.
Sure. What if it wasn't just effortless, but it was a flow?
Right.
Right. And yeah, definitely knowing where you're going and knowing that the rapids will take you where they want to go as well. And having to surrender while also being engaged.
Right.
Yeah. That dual state, right? It's not all binary. It's not either like I force life into existence or I allow it. No, it's a bring yourself, bring your energy.
Well, also you know, I think your description of Tony Robbins and the way he could flow with his whatever comes up, that's a state of flow where the opposite of flow would be having to then defend yourself because you were an ass, or becoming rigid or stopping. So flow doesn't really speak, I don't think, to this just letting everything take you, but being in a state where you can move with whatever's there and decide where you go and deal with it and stay present and interact.
Agreement.
You know, so I love that analogy, your description of him. I've never met him. I've been aware of his work for years, of course, but who hasn't, right?
I mean, he's like, who never heard of the guy?
Yeah.
I'm amazed at how many people haven't.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, crazy.
I wanted to ask you about decision making, right? So on this path, we all have to make decisions. And then the question arises, where do we make those decisions from? And Cody and I, kind of our core, I guess, expertise, what we teach is intuition and learning how to become aware of energy and how to use those subtle abilities to guide your life. And in terms of a sports analogy, like my favorite athlete of all time is Wayne Gretzky, because I grew up playing ice hockey. So I was just playing ice hockey in Canada like last month.
He's the great one.
He's the great one. And he wasn't the biggest, the fastest, the hardest shot. He didn't have any of the best skills. And yet he has destroyed like 65 NHL records. And the one thing that he had, he called it anticipation. So his ability to like know where the puck was going to go, know how the play was going to formulate and unfold. And that one, like, you know, invisible thing is what made him the great one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, he's definitely one of those tens that I look up to. In your work, that kind of anticipation or that ability of intuition, how do you approach that with your clients? And how do you get them to tap into a place where they, when they make a decision, it's not just analytical or not just, I should do it because this person thinks I should, or I should do it because the person I look up to did? How do they find that authentic place to make a decision? What does that process look like?
Just to be clear, a lot of people come up with that first. So I talked about week one, going over 8 areas and going through that process of the 10 out of 10, the where are you now, the horizon self. And there's a couple other things, but people then have, we usually do one area together and then the homework is to do the rest of them in that first week. And then they come back and they share those and then I have them put them together and create a scene of like, if all of that worked out, what would that life be? What would be that moment where you realize I'm now living this? So describe that moment and then describe the self that's living that moment. And what's really powerful, I did a Facebook Live recently with a buddy of mine who did my program, and there was a moment specifically with him, but it's happened with other people, but how he said it was just beautiful. Because he came in with his homework done and I had him start reading and he stopped. And he looked at me and he said, what if your horizon life is boring? And I looked at him and said, after a pause, why would you create a boring horizon life? And he looked at me and looked at the paper, looked at me, and it clicked that he was living into someone else's idea of what he should be.
Mm-hmm. And was it a family member or coworker?
I mean, I think it was an amalgam of just everyone.
Society or something.
Yeah, because he's really interested in Tantra. Right? He's got a military background, but he also really wanted to study Tantra and sexuality and energy and all of these different things. And part of him was ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
And when he realized that he'd been living into someone else's view, it freed him. Someone else's view of what he should be. It freed him in that moment. And he went like pretty much immediately and just dove in and started really studying what he wanted to be studying full on and presenting himself to the world full on as the man he really is to the core. And so again, the safety and permission thing, right? You can be like a big, strong man with a military background and know what you want and still not feel allowed to do it.
Right.
The decision-making has to come from a place of safety and clarity. And also one of the things that re-anchored in me going to Unleash the Power Within with Tony Robbins, I mean, I got certified to be an NLP practitioner, neuro-linguistic programming and hypnotherapy and timeline therapy when I was 19.
Wow.
And so like a lot of the stuff that he teaches has been part of my life for at least that long, right? I knew the theory and some of the practice, and still it reminded me, being surrounded by 12,000 people, how important it is to constantly get yourself into peak state, right? So Tony says you want to change your psychology, change your physiology. So even just sitting up with your shoulders back, there's an exercise that I got from him years ago that if you ever feel down, start walking like you have a superhero cape on. It's blowing back in the wind, right? Automatically, your chest goes up, your shoulders go back, your chin goes up, and you feel powerful. And there's all kinds of documentation about how that leads to an empowered state in people. Mm-hmm. There's great TED Talks about power poses. But all of this is to say, get yourself into peak state, then make decisions. Right? Making decisions from a disempowered state is disempowering.
Mm.
Right? The confusion that we have often is because we're not managing state as the version of ourselves that we want to be, right? Authenticity becomes really challenging when people treat every whim as their authentic self, right? And that's where that danger of flow comes in, right?
Oh, right.
I mean, I don't drink anymore. When I did, I'd be out at 3 a.m. and crave a burger and fries. That was like the ideal thing, or a hot dog from like a street vendor, right? Toronto's known for, like, we call it street meat, as appetizing as that is. And that felt like my authentic self would like poutine, French fries with gravy and cheese curd, right? When I stopped drinking, I still was going out with my friends sometimes, and I ate that food, and I woke up with the same sick feeling that I was attributing to the alcohol because of the food choices. When I did my first juice, I mean, I call it a juice feast because I wasn't depriving myself of anything. I was having a lot of juice, but just letting my body digest cleaner. I did 4 days with no solid food, just juice. It was the first time I did that. And afterwards, all my body wanted was like khichdi and miso soup and really gentle foods, right? So the craving shifted, right? How I tasted things, my ability to register flavor shifted. And so shifting state meant that my cravings, so trust the body. People say intuition is trusting the body. Getting the body into as clean a space as you can and then trusting it is what I would say.
Right.
Till then, I mean, honestly, be a little dubious. right? Be like, is that honoring my highest self or is that honoring a fractured, unhealthy whim?
Yeah, before you wake up on the floor with chocolate all over your face and empty cookie boxes. Yeah.
Right. And so people will justify that kind of binge eating by saying, oh, I'm honoring myself. I wanted that, so I'm going to give it to myself. But what is the actual need that's there?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We had a guest who talked a lot about intuitive eating and how before you can do intuitive eating, you have to cleanse your body. Otherwise, that's exactly what will happen.
It's just cravings.
Yeah. Energetically, it's the same thing.
Right.
Totally. Totally, totally. Yeah.
Well, even creating your vision, it's the same thing. You have to kind of create that connection, which I loved your question, David, about how, Nick, how you get people into that intuitive state. Because from our training and what we do, that's really the place. You have to have that connection and be clear with it before you ask some of these bigger questions or before you envision where you want to be. And I like hearing the way you work around to that. That's a really great kind of method. And it just, for me, what it lit up was just realizing how little we have permission to truly be ourselves. Like how we have to work at that to kind of find that permission to be yourself, like that military guy. You know, he was being somebody, right? But it really wasn't satisfying because it really wasn't himself. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's cool stuff.
Anyways, can you hold on for 1 second?
Yeah.
I am having a coconut delivery and the guy is knocking on my door.
I love it.
We've never had a coconut delivery during our podcast before.
I've already paid for them. Just leave them by the door. But 1 second. I'll be right back.
I'll take some coconut. When I was living in Bali, we also got coconut delivery.
Seriously?
Every day. Every other day, they would bring two.
Did they bring a machete too, or you have to have your own?
No, they open it for you if you wanted. And I think it total was like $1 or something.
Wow.
$2 maybe for the delivery.
How fun.
Yeah.
And did you just drink right out of the coconut?
Yeah, you just put a straw in
there. All right, we're back.
Cool.
Speaking of creating your life, there's nothing like having coconuts delivered to the front door.
Two fresh coconuts daily. The guy's lovely.
You drink two every day?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a big guy, yeah.
Yeah, I usually put one into a smoothie, and then I'll drink one through the day. I sweat a lot. The details that your listeners want to hear.
On that note, what does a life coach's day look like? Are you very regimented? Do you exercise a certain time every day? Do you meditate for a certain amount of time, or are you more free flowing?
A little bit of both. So I tend to wake up, throw a smile on my face if it's not just already there. And I've been through a lot of emotion through my life. And there were periods of my life where I'd cry myself to sleep every night and just wake up freaking out. So to be able to wake up and just naturally be in like an excited joy state, it took some time to get there. And I like to make sure that I say things like that so that people understand that wherever they're at, you can create the self that you want. Mm. But it is a creation, right? I mean, am I allowed to swear on this program?
Sure, of course.
So, I mean, I'm just quoting Tony Robbins, but in the Netflix movie, I'm Not Your Guru, he says, I created this motherfucker.
Yeah.
And that's essentially it. Can you create the you that you want to be? Because we're doing it anyways. So we're either doing it consciously or not.
Right. So you're either creating or you're not creating. Yeah.
Or we're letting it happen to us.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. But that's still
if we do it unconsciously, mostly the world's creating us probably much more than ourselves. But it's like
through our constant agreement to it.
Exactly.
Right. Like it's still us, I think. So, I mean, I always say everyone's playing a game and everyone's winning the game that they're playing. If you don't like what's in your life, you need to look at what game are you playing? What are you validating? Right. For a long time, I was validating some really disempowering stories. And once I saw that I was doing that to myself, it freed me. And what I like about it is not blaming. It's actually really empowering to say, oh, wow, if I created that, I can create anything.
What were one of the stories that you were invalidating?
That I wasn't loved and supported by anyone, that I couldn't trust anyone, that my parents didn't understand me, didn't get me. I mean, the work that I've done transforming the relationships with both my mother and my father is just amazing. I mean, my first year in Bali, I was estranged from my dad. Wasn't talking to him, thought that I might never talk to him. I had so much anger. And last July, I had a huge breakthrough with that, with him. And when I saw that I had created the opposite of the type of relationship that I wanted to have with my dad, I wept. I got that it was just me. And it was funny because I injured myself and was in bed right around the time of American Father's Day. I didn't know that there was Father's Day at different times of the year, but on this side of the world, the Aussie version is a different time of the year. So Canada and the US have the same Father's Day. And my Facebook feed, because I was just in bed with a strained neck, I couldn't turn my neck for 2 weeks. My Facebook feed was full of Happy Father's Day messages. And I saw myself get angry at them. And I don't tend to think of myself as an angry person. So I just kind of followed the anger. I traced it back. And what I realized was the flavor of the anger was a feeling of loss and longing, something I feel like I missed out on and wanted. So I said, well, what if I took responsibility for this? What did I want from father, right? As like an archetype, not just this human man, but as an archetype. And could I give that to myself somehow or set up a situation where I'm getting that somehow? And I made a list of everything I wanted from the archetype of father. And the list looked a lot like my dad. And I thought, well, that's strange. What's going on? And then I had all these criticisms. Yeah, but he wasn't around as much as I wanted him to. And he wasn't as consistent. And I saw all the same complaints about myself. These were the same judgments that I had of myself. Mm. And I saw that me complaining that he wasn't around enough was keeping him away, right? Like, because I was resenting him for not being around, I was pushing him away. Mm-hmm. And he'd been trying to get back into my life, my whole life, pretty much. And so I called him the next day and we had a beautiful conversation. And he immediately, I mean, I was very lucky. He immediately met me with love and understanding. And we both cried. And he said that it was his heart's greatest desire to see me free from that loop, right? Wonderful. And he said something that's like, this now means you can have a life. You can now have like money and a relationship and all the things that I always wanted, he said, like, was now possible. And I think he was right, right? That safety and permission, as long as I was telling a story that I was not loved by my father, that I had to show what the effect was. I was winning the hurt little boy game in my life. And so I couldn't succeed and validate the poor me story. One of the exercises that I do in my program is I have people go back and rewrite their life story from the point of view of their horizon self. If everything worked out, how would that version of you talk about your past? And I mean, it sounds like I cry a lot, and I guess I do. But when I did that exercise for the first time, I cried.
Right.
I was in a cafe writing, and all of a sudden I realized how much love I was ignoring because I was telling a tragedy. So I was editing my life experience so that it sounded like a tragedy. It wasn't conscious at that time. And I was ignoring anything that would be empowering or loving. Mm. So, yeah.
That's a powerful story.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful story. And it seems like for most of us, if not all of us, that a lot of our power is locked in some of these past moments that we haven't kind of quite come to grips to. And I like what I've seen Tony Robbins say this, where he says, you know, you should thank your mother or your father, whoever didn't love you, because you wouldn't have turned out to be the person that you are if they did. You know, like for him, his dad left and he had no money and he never would have, you know, gone on to help other people and then made all these businesses and became who he was if his dad had left. So I think turning that perspective around and going, well, there's a real good side of this. And then healing what needs to be healed is incredibly powerful.
I totally agree. And I used to not like myself. So the idea that, oh, I wouldn't be the me that I am if not for them is like, yeah, that's why I'm angry. I felt like a waste of potential, right? Mm-hmm. People approach me and say, wow, there's an energy to you. There's a power to you. You have this voice and this charisma. And I thought, yeah, and if I'd been raised properly, then that would have amounted to something. Since I wasn't, right, I'm stuck here. Mm. And I mean, I completely agree that it's important to thank everything and to turn the story into one of triumph, to one where you win, to one where you got to become the you that you most wanted to be, not in spite of the odds, but because of them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it took some reworking. And I totally sidetracked your question about the daily routine, but I wake up and I'm constantly re-presencing the me that I want to be. So I do, I mean, I hydrate. I just bought a skull mug that you can see if you watch the video version of this. It's a little bit of a meditation on death. Like, we don't have tomorrow promised. And I'm a Scorpio and we like, I don't know, dark things, but apparently. So I tend to wake up and I shake a little bit, right? So it's a combination of just free flow dance and dynamic meditation from Osho, right? So just kind of wake the body up. Then I start doing some breathing, and it's usually, it's one of the two, or sometimes two. Again, Tony Robbins does a priming exercise where he's like actively punching his hands up and bringing them down while he's breathing sort of pranayama. Mm-hmm. And then a Wim Hof cycle sometimes. So a cyclical deep breath for 30 and then push it all out, hold it as long as I can, breathe in, hold that as long as I can while tensing every muscle in my body. And then sometimes I only do one round. I mean, his thing is three rounds of it. But mm-hmm. even one round is enough to totally activate my system. And again, with the hydration, I find that that preps me. And then I usually do visualization exercises. So that might be writing, or sometimes what I've been doing lately is embodying the physicality of my horizon self. So standing a certain way, really letting it fill me. And then my eyes closed and like, knowing the room around me, I picture myself and my timeline stepping into my horizon self. And lately, I've been picturing my horizon self with his back to me, and it almost opens up like a Iron Man suit. And this is where like knowing the room around you, with my eyes closed, I imagine stepping into it, forming around me, and like taking a physical step into the future that I'm creating. And yeah, basically treating it the same way as the first step in the firewalk that you do at Unleash the Power Within, right? Mm-hmm. Just knowing where you're going, being really clear in the outcome, being in a powerful state, and then choosing, making your move and choosing. So starting the day like that has been just beautiful.
That's awesome. Wow, you're more disciplined than me, that's for sure.
I mean, I do it almost every day. And if I don't, I forgive myself. I mean, yeah, it's going to show us. I mean, I also do some kind of movement exercise these days, realizing, and this is important to my whole philosophy. If you just walk into a gym and say, I want to get fit, and they start giving you a program, fire that trainer, right? The next question should be, what does fit mean to you? You want to be fit? What does that mean to you? For some people, that means being a power lifter. They want to be able to lift a house, right? Mm-hmm. Some people, being fit means being able to run a marathon. Some people, it means whatever. Each has a different pathway and methodology to get there. For me, I used to just default into weights, but I don't want to be a bodybuilder. Like, just pure aesthetic isn't what I was after. And I have all kinds of belief, even post-op, that I would never get there anyway. Like, I've got scars on my chest from my operation, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't need to be bigger. Like, when I used to be 20 or 30 pounds heavier, like arm, I get interacted with really differently. And it's interesting because it's already tough for men to have emotions out in the world. When you look like Goliath, people tend to project certain things. And it was really interesting watching that come back. And there's not much that I need to be stronger for in life, right? Of course, I want to be a little bit stronger, but just focusing purely on brute strength wasn't necessarily the draw. What I want is I want longevity and I want control over my body. And so, I mean, I have gymnastics rings hanging up and I have straps. I have this big beam in this room that I'm in right now with all kinds of different apparatus hanging off of it that allow me to train my body in a connected way. And so I've defined fitness, like I want to be kind of like a dancer ninja CrossFitter and maybe like in that progression. And so that's what I'm aiming at. That's what I'm training myself for. So again, I think it's really important to know, what are you aiming yourself at? What's a win for you? Because there's different ways of getting there.
Absolutely. And Nick, so in terms of getting there, you have a 7-week program.
7-week program, yeah.
Yeah. And
7-week program, 8 areas of life. It's confusing.
Got it.
That was the 8. I knew there was an 8 in there.
Yeah.
So for those listening to this podcast, so my mom and my brother.
Hello.
Hey, Mom. For all those listening to this podcast, it was like, man, I want 7 weeks to start to transform my life and have Nick hold me accountable so I can become a dancing ninja or whatever it is I want to be. Wayne Gretzky dancing ninja. How do they find you and how does that work?
Sure. So I have two websites, lifeathletics.com. And Nick Wood, nik-wood.com. And there's information about the program on both. Awesome. They can also email me at nik@lifeathletics.com. And
your podcast?
It's called Life Athletics. And
right on iTunes. Yeah. Okay.
And it's on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you might listen to podcasts. It's fun because people will write in and say, oh, I heard you on this app that I've never heard of. So it's really cool how technology works. We're living in the future.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
So it just radiates out there. I'm also uploading all of the audios with like a still image to YouTube so people can find the podcast there.
Oh, cool.
There's 155 episodes as of today.
Wow.
And they're interviews. So I'm talking to other people who, in my estimation, were winning their game. Right, who are high level at something. And it ranges. Some people are, I mean, I've interviewed people who are best in the world at CrossFit, best in the world in basketball, but I've also interviewed people who are amazing parents or artists, mm-hmm. who are business people, who bring a different approach. And for me, it's this cross-pollination of thinking. But the same way that a tennis player could get benefit from a skier, I think that whatever we're up to in life, we can get benefit by listening to someone who's really doing their thing full on.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
That's the idea of the podcast.
Awesome. That's why we've got you here. We've got the same idea. Nick, it's so good to see you again. Hopefully I'll see you again this year if I come back to Bali.
I look forward to it.
Lucky, lucky guy living in paradise, podcasting, teaching, life coaching. If there's ever a good example of somebody taking their life and then doing what they want, living in Southeast Asia, enjoying everything, I think it would be you. So there it is. Look at him. There he
is. I'll receive. I'm learning how to receive. There's always something to learn. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for being here. Thanks everyone for listening to Energy Matters as always. Nick Wood, awesome life coach, lifeathletics.com. We'll see you on the next episode. Enjoy yourselves.
Well, that was Nick Wood, and what a wonderful conversation. Great to speak with him, and I'm so excited about his style of coaching and the idea of kind of life as a game and training yourself just like you would with any sport to live and have a better life. And,
yeah,
and thank you so much, David, for bringing him out, you know, meeting him in Bali. And it was exciting to talk to him from Bali.
I love that. Almost felt like you were there.
I know.
Yeah. And that idea that you get to choose which game you're playing is a fascinating one. Sometimes I think we find ourselves playing this like guilt game with somebody, or like this who's better game, or this competition game, or the love game, or the compassion game, or the growth game. And he's not saying one game's better than the other, but that you can choose the game you're playing, but you want to be aware of which one you're playing. So I thought that was a really special message. And he's a fantastic coach. Sign me up. And you don't have to be in Bali to work with Nick. He works via Skype. He's got a great podcast, Life Athletics, and you can find him at lifeathletics.com. Super down-to-earth, humble guy, has a lot to offer. And after meeting him, I was like, man, I found this kind of secret, amazing coach who's living in Bali that no one knows about, and I want to share him with the world. So we got him on. That was Nick Wood, everyone. And thank you, as always, for listening to the Energy Matters podcast. You can find us at energymatterspodcast.com, where Cody and I are finally starting to offer some courses that you can download and listen to, meditate with us. So that's exciting that that is beginning to happen. And as always, thanks for being here. And we'll see you in the next episode of Energy Matters. Meditate. Enjoy yourself. Take care.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.